Thank you all for spending some time with me this afternoon to talk about SharePoint development. So before we get started, just maybe a quick little show of hands here, some exercise so that I have a sense of what experiences we have in the room, and we can tailor this a little bit based on that. So how many folks in the room are currently building solutions deploying to SharePoint using Visual Studio? All right. How many folks have a feeling that sometime in the near future you're going to be asked to build a solution and deploy it to SharePoint? And how many of you are scared to death of the fact that that could be nasty? All right. So my name's Jay Schmelzer. I'm one of the directors of program management on the Visual Studio team at Microsoft. My team is responsible for a number of areas of the product. Actually, that's one more question we'll ask. How many folks consider themselves a developer? Okay? How many are consider themselves more on the kind of IT professional, administrative, dabble in apps, managing servers, managing farms, those kind of things? Okay, so we have a few people here trying to figure out what to do and a few people trying to figure out what the heck are people going to do to my servers. Okay. Well, we'll talk about both. Anyway, my name is Jay Schmelzer. I'm a director of program management on Visual Studio. My group is responsible for a number of aspects of the Visual Studio experience. The one most interesting to everybody in the room today is probably all of the experiences and tools within Visual Studio for targeting SharePoint and Office. My team also does all of the tools for deploying to Windows Azure and working with Windows and SQL Azure, as well as a number of other things, including a highly productive development environment for really departmental-sized apps, that being Visual Studio Lightswitch. Today, we'll spend our time talking about SharePoint and SharePoint development. And what I thought we would do as a basic agenda, I think it's interesting to give you a little bit of insight into how we thought about building and designing the product, give you a little sense of what you could expect from the experience when you go into it, a little bit of an understanding of why, if something's not there, maybe why it's not there, so you have some expectations there, or more data to yell at me about why we didn't do it. I want to spend most of the time, though, talking about Visual Studio 2012, and in reality, what I'll actually do is I will touch on the entire experience, and I'll give you some call-outs as to what's new in 2012 versus some experiences that have always been there in Visual Studio 2010. Everything we talk about is going to be targeted at developing for SharePoint 2010, the current version of SharePoint in the market. So unfortunately, no new information about anything coming in SharePoint. That's not something we're going to talk about today. If we have time, which we might not, I've got a lot I plan to cover in the session. We'll also hit on that third one. I'll give you a really quick demo of Lightswitch in this experience and talk a little bit about how you might want to think about that as just a tool in your tool belt when building and targeting SharePoint. And the last bullet is near and dear to my heart. I know it's only the second day, but it is the afternoon. You're probably getting pretty close to death by PowerPoint at this point. So what I thought we would do is try to just actually let the product and me speak for itself, and we'll spend as much of this in Visual Studio as we can. I've got some slides that we can go to if you guys seem to start getting bored of demos. But they're in the deck. You can grab them, use them, and if we need to, we'll refer back to them. But with that, let's just dive in and start actually using Visual Studio and seeing what this experience is like. So this is Visual Studio 2012. This is the release candidate. I am running on the ultimate SKU of Visual Studio, so this is the granddaddy of all Visual Studio products. The vast majority of everything I show you today can be done with Visual Studio Professional, Premium, or Ultimate editions. There will be a few things towards the end that I will show you that are unique to Ultimate, but the vast majority of the content you can do just with Visual Studio Professional. So no concerns there, no problems. Let's get started. Obviously, we're going to start with a new project. Now, a core design goal we had back when we started doing SharePoint tooling in Visual Studio was we wanted to make the experience consistent. We did not want you to have to go and throw out everything you knew about working with Visual Studio just because you wanted to start building and targeting SharePoint. So you're going to see we put a lot of energy into making those experiences consistent. One of the things we did in the Visual Studio 2012 product was learn from the data and the usage that we saw in 2010. And so one of the first things you'll notice is that the new project list is a lot smaller. The reason for this is we found that actually, these are really the only ones you guys use when you're creating a new project, And all that other stuff was kind of noise. We didn't remove any capabilities. All we did was focus this more on what was actually being used as a common starting point for a project. As you'll see, we have lots of other things you can add to this once you get started. But usually, these were the places that we saw people thinking about when they were getting started, whether it was just a project, which actually is the most popular one, the empty project. Oops. We've added the ability to use a Silverlight web part now. That used to be available just as a download add-on pack. It's now core built into the product. We included the ability to do visual web part design and target the sandbox, so that's in there, as well as our import capabilities for grabbing a solution package and pulling it into the product. These are actually interesting and worth talking about for a minute. I wasn't planning to demo them, but one other thing that was a core part of our design when we put this together was acknowledging that there are multiple tools available for building and targeting and doing customizations on SharePoint. You have everything from the SharePoint browser interface, right, for defining lists and stuff like that. You have that next step around things like SharePoint Designer that lets you make edits and those kind of things. The challenge with those two tools is that they work directly against a live site, right? They work directly against that content database. Visual Studio likes files on disk. So what we did to try to enable a bit of a kind of continuum or allow those tools to work together was support the idea of importing solution packages. Now, we have more work that we need to do around helping you figure out what the heck is in that package and what you want to bring in and what you don't. The package is really meant as a deployment vehicle, so it grabs everything. But it will allow you to go through and pick out the aspects of that site that have been customized that you want to pull in, create as files on disk that Visual Studio can understand, which also then translates to being files that Visual Studio can manage via source control for version and migration and those kinds of things. So that was the idea behind that that project. Let's just start with a empty project. I'll call it a TechEd demo. And the first thing that you're going to see is that we're going to go and ask you, okay, where's the site that you want to work against? Now, in Visual Studio 2012, just like with Visual Studio 2010, we do have the requirement that Visual Studio and SharePoint need to be on the developer's machine to do active development. I know it's a little bit of a bummer, but the reality behind that is with SharePoint 2010, we did run into some challenges around the way SharePoint hosts sites and so forth in app domains. What that really means to you guys as a developer is that it's not predictable when you're debugging when we would lock a site. So you and I could be working together on two completely unrelated sites on the same server. I'm sitting at a breakpoint and you're frozen, and you have no idea why. We decided that was a bad experience, so that's part of the reason why we require the local installation. So we're going to go in here. Let's go see if I think I have a site called TechEd. Let's check. Do a validate real quick. Go off and see if that's there. Yes, it is. So that's just declaring the site that I have. I highly recommend as a developer go create site collections and work on site collections that are not the root site collection. That way, when things go wrong, you just delete the site collection and move on. Deleting the root site collection, not a good idea. So this just sort of gives yourself a nice little playground to work on as a developer. So when things go wrong, you can clean up. The next thing we ask you about is sandbox solution versus farm solution. If you're not familiar with this, sandbox solution is something that was introduced in SharePoint 2010. It really, what it does is it gives us an isolated environment to run code. That environment, that process, can be moved to a completely different set of machines in the farm if you want to. It can be throttled. It can be governed. You can set constraints on it so that if something starts running out of control, you can have the server kill it. All those things, right? A way of just sort of isolating that user code. So it's a good practice to try to do that where possible. It does restrict what you can do in your solution. But for the most part, what we've found, what I've heard from current customers that are using it, is that as long as what you're trying to do is within the site collection, you should be able to do it within that sandbox. If the thing you're trying to do is reach up and around and do other things or do administrative stuff of a site or a site collection, then you're going to have to go to the farm level. The other nice thing about these two is you don't need to be an admin to install something into the sandbox. You do need to be an admin to install into a farm solution. So for this purpose, we'll go that way. So let's go ahead and create our project. You see that we have an empty project here. The only thing that's really different from a standard Visual Studio project is that we have features and packages nodes showing up. And I'll drill into that a little bit later when we have something to look at. Those are really the only two SharePointisms that we see at this point. One piece of feedback we got with Visual Studio 2010 was that there were a few things missing in the developer experience. We knew that going in. We knew we were doing our first round of support for building SharePoint solutions, and SharePoint was on the fourth or fifth version of their product, so we knew we weren't going to get everything. One of the things that was brought up the most was lack of the ability to just create a list without leaving Visual Studio. Okay, you could do it, but it involved XML, right? Which, love my angle brackets, but not when I'm trying to define a list, right? So one of the things we did in Visual Studio 2012 was add the ability right within Visual Studio to create a list. Before I do that, you will see that here is a list of all the things that you can add to your project, and everything that was there before, some of which used to show up in the new project dialog, have migrated their way into here. That's all there, as well as these new additional pieces. So in this case, we'll create a list. By the way, I forgot to mention, if you guys are bored or want some energy and there's something you think is cool and you want to clap, I don't get offended by that. So it's all cool. Thank you. let's just call this my list, for lack of a better term. That goes both ways. If you don't like it, you can boo, too. Let's just try to keep that to a minimum, though. What the list designer will do is it'll ask you if you want to base this off an existing list or create something completely from scratch. The existing list, that will be a drop-down of all the lists that have been created and exist on your dev instance or in the site that you pointed us to. So, for example, we might say that we want to base this off of contacts or tasks or something like that. When we say finish, we see we're going to go out and we're going to read the metadata for the list you chose. We're going to populate that as a starting point for your list definition. Going through here, you see we've got all the stuff that you'd expect. This is all the fields that show up from a task list. We can go in and we can start creating new things. I don't know, maybe there's none of this is going to make any sense. But what you see is that I've got access to all of the fields also that are part of that site collection that I'm working in. So if I want to reuse a field across different lists or reuse a field definition, I can do that. We see that all from our drop-down list. So maybe my task had an anniversary on it. We could also go in here and decide, you know, maybe as part of my task, what I'm trying to do is track somebody's pets. I don't know. I'm making stuff up on the fly, guys. So, one of the things we can do here, though, that I wanted to show is the ability to actually make this a multi-choice, which is going to give us a select list. When we go in, we can see that we can edit the select list, and we can, you know, give our choices of dog, you know, cat, fish, pony, right? Those kind of things, all just part of the definition of that list. In addition, we can go in and we can design the views that people might want to have. So you see with a task list, we brought in all of the default views that were associated with that list definition on your site collection. We can go in, we can modify these views. So maybe in my tasks, in my all tasks, I don't care about attachments. I can remove that. Maybe I think pets are very important as part of a task list. We can move that up. All of those things. We can define new lists. We can, or new views. We can take views away. Full control of the actual list. Kind of along our idea of trying to pick some good defaults, some good patterns. You know, we go with names, we default it to being part of the quick launch, those things. These are all things you can go in and turn off and tweak if you don't want them. You can even completely hide the list if it's a private list. But just trying to make some good decisions based on the patterns that we see people use, but still give you the power if you need to get in and control it. A great example of that is around the content type. If you're familiar with SharePoint and you're deep in there, you know content types are a great way to manage kind of list schema and versioning and those kinds of things. So it's something that people often like to get a hold of. By default, we'll do that for you. We'll start creating a content type and appending it and doing that. If you don't like the way we've done it, you can go in and you can take full control of the content types as well. And you can actually get in and the list designer can turn itself into a content type designer as well, if you want to work at that level. So it's pretty flexible in terms of power, but I think also very approachable for folks that haven't gotten as deep into the land of SharePoint. Okay, so that's a little bit of our list of kind of experience. I'm going to go ahead and delete this one. You may have noticed, well, actually, we'll see it in the next one. Let's delete that one. Let's create a new one. And we'll do something a little bit more simpler, a little more simple for the rest of our demo here. So we'll create a new list, and we'll just call it a J task list. We'll add that. We'll just do a blank one, and we'll say go. So every list has a title, so that, of course, is already in there by default, kind of like a database has an identity or a key. We kind of just keep those in there. For this case, let's go ahead and let's create a due date for our task. We'll go ahead and reuse the task due date field that already exists. And let's also create a status. And for that, we'll reuse the existing task status. And you see that what I have when I reuse those is because there's a choice list there, we can drill in, you know, we can see what those choices are right through our property experience, right? We see that the standard choices have just come in. So we pull all that information in for you as part of defining this list. I could decide to create a new view. We'll just go ahead and create the one, keep the ones that are default. Maybe we'll remove our attachments just for the sake of doing that. So now we've gone and we've added a list. At this point, I can F5 or Control F5, and what you'll see is Visual Studio is going to go and it's going to package all of this stuff up. It's going to put it in WSP. It's going to go take it into your local SharePoint instance. I apologize. This is going to be annoying, but and it's going to deploy it to your site. And now we're going to see that now I have J's task list is now deployed to my local site, and I can start working with it and doing things. So that, by the way, we'll see that a lot more, and I'll go into a lot more details of what is actually happening there and how you can control it. But that is probably the biggest investment area we have over, you know, consistently is what used to take, I think in that case, when we did it manually before, it's about 24 individual steps that you would need to do. And we took it down to 1F5. So hopefully it's a lot better. There you go. I owe you for that one. Okay. Yeah. The question was, I compiled it against the 4.0 framework. Actually, I didn't. I compiled it against the 3.5 framework. The dialogue lied to you. So I assume you were looking at the new project dialogue and said 4. Yeah, it lied. We target the same version of framework that SharePoint targets, right? And so in SharePoint 2010, that's .NET FX3.5, right? Or derivation of it. Rather than have your dialog come up empty because you forgot to change it, we decided we'll just show it to you, and if you said 4.0 or left it 4.0, we'll switch it behind the scenes to make it work, rather than give you a big error or something like that. So normally I don't like doing that, but I decided F5 that works is better than errors. So yeah, quick question. Yeah, one of the things that we do is there is an option. I thought it was right on the, let me bring up that list designer again. Where'd it go? There is an option in here to not create an instance as well as a template. We're actually doing both, right? So you'll see that we've created a list definition and a list instance as part of this. You can go and just do a list definition as well if you wanted to. Yeah. Sure, the question was, within the list designer, can I specify filters for these views? And where did we move that to? Oh, actually, you know what? Oh, yeah, it's over. I believe it's a property grid experience today. Oh, shoot, where'd it go? Sorry, you know what? That's actually one of the things we had to pull out at the last minute. It is something that we're trying to do. It's not there yet. So the question is, like, I guess there was two parts to the question of what's the scope of the list definitions, field definitions, and so forth that we show you, We'll actually show you both what's on your site collection and what's in your solution and not deployed yet. So we grab both of those things. And then the other question was, well, to put it bluntly, how performant is this? Is it going to go hit the thing every time, or are we going to do some smart caching in between and those kinds of things? Maybe it's... We hit it, we query, and then we cache for your session of Visual Studio. We won't, unless, because we're kind of making a short assumption that you're using one instance of Visual Studio to your local machine, and it's not changing too much around you. We try to optimize a little bit, but if not, there is a force me to relook, which usually is close Visual Studio and start again. But okay, I'll take one more real quick. Yeah. So the question is, aside from just creating a list, can I go modify one that already exists? That one is a little more complicated, and the designer doesn't do a great job of it yet, because Visual Studio just sort of assumes that the list you create is the one you own. And I'll show you some techniques, and you'll see some things where Visual Studio will pull the list back, right, often, because it thinks it needs to redeploy it. Later on in the demo, I'll show you some techniques for avoiding that and how I deal with that. Okay, let's move on. Lists are obviously a very popular topic, but we can talk about that more. I'll try to save some time for questions at the end, too. Okay, so we have our list. The next thing that we know people want to do is usually create some kind of web part or some kind of visualization for interacting with, whether it be data in SharePoint or data elsewhere. For the purpose of today, we'll just keep working against SharePoint data. So let's go in and let's add a web part. So go add new item. And as I mentioned, you see we have visual web part now shows up, and it shows up in sandbox solutions as well. It used to only work for the farm. We've fixed that problem. We now know how to do it and make it work in sandbox as well. So we've added the designer back in for sandbox solutions as well. Just a reminder, that's usually an applause point for folks, but that's cool. All right, that's annoying. I'll stop doing that, I promise. Let's go call it the task adder. Okay, now another thing that we've done, and you'll see this a little bit later, but we have continued to enhance the design experience inside of Visual Studio for working with SharePoint. What we do is we do go off and we will query against your SharePoint site, right, to try to find interesting things that you might want to use for various properties that you're setting, right, so images and those kinds of things. We continue to do that. We've enhanced that resolver to actually understand the content database a little bit more as well. So if it's not physically something in the Hive, but it's sitting more in a content database entry, we can usually find those things also. And you'll see that a little bit with some JavaScript stuff that we might do. Okay, so we have the designer. We did the visual one, so which means we have the visual designer that we can use. If I say, enter a new task, we can go and use all of the capabilities that you'd expect. So let's go grab a text box, for example. We can drag that over and drop it on. So we have our text box. Everything that has gone into Visual Studio 2011 for web developers is available to you as SharePoint developers as well. So all the great enhancements that have gone in to markup, right? So some of this stuff has existed for a while, some of it's new. Maybe you're more of a markup kind of person and you want to work in this view rather than designer view. Well, you can do drag drop here as well. So maybe we want to go and say, let's go put a calendar. What we'll do is I'll go in here and say, due date. And then we'll come back over here and let's say we're a source guy. We want to go in and underneath that we want to put a calendar control. We can go drop that in. This is easier if I just pin it. Not close it. Pin it. View. Where'd you go? Property window. Toolbox, I mean. Pin. So we will drag our calendar into our source where we want it. So boom, we can drag that over, drop it in, and we get a calendar control. We can also, if you really are a markup person, right? Just go ahead, just start typing, right? And let's say we want to add a button. Well, we can just add a button, and all of the work that they did in the HTML editor and the ASP.NET editor to do two snippets all just carries over, right? Trying to keep that consistent experience. So if you're a web developer and the techniques you use for Visual Studio, trying to make as many of those as possible stay consistent when you're working in the SharePoint experience as well. So we can say, you know, add task. We want to give it an ID, for example. We can do that. Add task button. And, you know, if we want to do the events, right, we can do that as well. And if we had one, we could pick it. If we don't, we'll just let the designer create it. Now I've got a code behind file that we'll go to in a minute with a click event handler. Let's go change these around and say, you know, task, give it some better names, due date. We'll go up here and say task title. Okay, so we've got some basic markup. I can flip back over to designer and see my lovely task adding page that I created as part of my web part. Next thing I'm going to do is we need to go in and let's just write the code to actually go and add a task to that SharePoint list. First thing I'll do, come up here and add a using. So we'll say using Microsoft.SharePoint. You might ask yourself, why is that not there by default since we know it's a SharePoint web part? That would be a very good question to ask yourself. And one that I will be asking my team on Monday when I'm back in the office. My team loves it when I do these events. So we can go in, you know, you see we're getting the normal IntelliSense experience, so we got, you know, we'll create a SharePoint list item, we'll call it, you know, task item. And then we'll just go off and grab the context for our current web, context.current.web. We're gonna grab the lists, and specifically we want to grab, what did we call it? JTaskList. And we'll say items, oops, not item count, items.add. So we'll add a new list item. Now that we have our task item, what we can do is we just go start filling in the values that we care about. So, you know, the first thing we had was a title. So we'll set that equal to task title.text, oops. We had a task item, I believe the one we picked was task due date, I think is what the name of the reusable one was. Anybody remember? Of course, someone's gonna remember once I have five and it doesn't work. Task due date, dot selected date, and we're gonna go just convert this to a short date string. So it's something that SharePoint understands. And we'll do task item. Last one we did was the task status. And in this case, we're just going to hard code this to not started. And we'll call task.item.update, which will save that task back into the list. And then just for fun, we're going to clear the title of the task, right, that we had. Let's go ahead and set a breakpoint. Let's hit F5. And see what happens. Whoa, what'd I do? Oh, thank you. Now, this is one of the things you'll see. This is what I was talking about, where we're going to add and remove things a lot. One of the things that Visual Studio does when we've deployed something is we go out and we recognize whether it's still there and whether we have a conflict. And in most cases, we can automatically resolve that. So what we're going to do is actually pull the list back and deploy it again in this case, which also means that any data we had in the list is gone. But for this demo, that's okay. Okay, so we're back here on our site. Let's go edit this page. We'll just play right with the default. Go ahead and delete that. What we'll do is we're going to go insert our web part. Visual Studio's, when you create them with Visual Studio, they automatically go into a category called custom. So we just go into custom, grab our web part, add that to our page. All right, that is there. And just to make our life easier for the demo, let's add our list in here as well. So we'll take Jay's task list and add that. Okay, so we've got our little UI and the other thing. Go to the page, we'll save and close that. And now, we'll say, the task of give a demo. We'll do that today. We'll add that task. Come back, and you see that we've hit our breakpoint. So we can now just start doing some stepping, right? And find out right now whether I got these names right or not. Title is right, test due date is right, test status is right. Hey, what do you know? Looks like we will add a task to that list. Woohoo! I can't believe I just did that. I just had a little real World Housewives of the Orange County moment there. So I apologize, I'll never do that again. That's sort of the basic experience, right? We go out, Visual Studio knows how to package them, knows how to deploy them, knows which process to attach to for the debugger and gets you going and debugging just with an F5 step. We also now, an important thing to realize about the way Visual Studio works, because of that resolution of things when we deploy them, when we deploy via the debugger, the other thing we do is when you stop the debugger, we start an automatic retraction of everything we just deployed. Reason being is we're assuming you're going to do some things and then go F5 again. So by retracting in the background, we save some time and don't cause you to wait for that to happen on your next F5. That's important because every now and then you may have done something, you close Visual Studio, and you just want to go to your site and your machine. You're like, where'd my content go? It's because you F5 deployed it. If you control F5, it'll stay. And I'll show you later how we can actually go and change that and make that not happen if you don't want it to. Okay, so that is a little bit of how to do basics of web part development. In that case, we're using the .NET client object model to interact with SharePoint, right? SharePoint's got a number of different client object models. Okay, those of you that are web developers, ASP.NET, cool, we love it. ASP.NET Web Forms, great technology, team still invests in it, but what's everybody talking about these days? HTML JavaScript, right? So how do we do that in a SharePoint context? Well, let's go see. Why don't we go, and let's, for the sake of keeping things consistent, we're gonna create the same UI, but this time rather than server-side ASP.NET and server-side code, we'll just do it all with HTML and JavaScript more client-side. So in this case, I'm still gonna go ahead and create a visual web part. I could have created a non-visual one as well. But this way we have the designer for ourselves. We'll call it task adder JS so that we remember it's JavaScript. This time, rather than watch me do all of this markup, we will go and let me drop in some simple markup. Oops, wrong one. Don't want that one, you just saw that. This one. So, just as ugly as before, but now we're just using standard HTML controls. We're not using ASP.NET server controls. And you see that we've got an input button with an add task. It's going to call a JavaScript function, and we'll get to that in a minute. I go to design view, you see it's pretty much effectively the same thing I had before. Okay, so we're going to do this with JavaScript. The JavaScript is not overly complicated that we need to do, but just so you don't watch me type, let's drop it in here, and I'll walk you through it. So what I've got here, now, for the sake of this demo, I'm going to throw everything in this single file. You can split these out, right, and do good separated. You know, put your scripts in one folder and your styles in another and all that stuff. But for the sake of our demo, we'll just throw it all in one file today. So in this case, we are using the JavaScript. Oops. First, we need to tell Visual Studio this is a script. And then we will tell Visual Studio where this script ends. Okay, now we get nice pretty colorization. Everybody feels better. So just like we did with the .NET side, we're basically following the same approach. We're just now using the JavaScript client object model provided by SharePoint. So we get the current web, all right, we get the context, we get the current web, we get the list. In this case, we're going to change this to my list, so we'll call it J task list. And then we go in and we get some creation information, we go add a new item to that list, and then we'll go through and just start setting those fields. So you see we've got the title, we've got the due date. Let's go grab this line, pop it in there, and we will update the task status as well. Task status. I don't even have that in the markup, probably, do I? Oh, you're right. Sorry, I just hard-coded this one. Not started. Thank you. And then, because it's JavaScript, everything's going to execute asynchronously. You guys are good. You guys are really paying attention. So we're going to call this asynchronously. We're going to give it two delegates. So if it completed, great. We'll give it a completed. If it failed, we'll give an error message. Okay, so that's just basic CSS and JavaScript. Obviously, if we're doing this, we probably want to make it look a little better. We want to leverage some other things. So what I'm also going to do, and we'll save ourselves some F5 time here. Let's not. Let's just see if it worked. So again, it's not recognizing the tab. This is just a bug. We'll get that. That should automatically pull back with the web part as well. So we've deployed that. Let's go modify this one. Go into our page. Edit the page. This guy was great, but we're going to get rid of it. Let's go instead insert our new web part. And we'll put our list back in as well. Okay. Go back to our page, save and close that. Do the demo. 06/12/2012. Add error. Awesome. Okay. Da-da-da-da. Title, due date. Okay. Title, due date. Oh. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, resolve. Yes. Okay. Okay, that's there. If I go to my task list, you'll see demo showed up. Cool? Okay. Yeah, if I really thought about it, I would have even showed you guys F12 debugging in that case, but next time. I'm sure I'll make another mistake, and we'll have plenty of chances to debug. Okay, so that's good, but hey, we're in the HTML JavaScript world. We need to make things look better. We want to take advantage of some stuff that is becoming really popular there, you know, maybe some common frameworks like jQuery and jQuery UI, right? So what we'll do here is let's just go back into this page, and I'm going to pull in a couple things. I'm going to pull in a set of includes for jQuery. And so all I'm doing here is pulling in a style sheet and pulling in some jQuery UI scripts that we can take advantage of. Next thing we'll do is let's go in and what we want to use from jQuery is we're going to use the date picker control that they have so that when I go into that due date text box, we get a nice little jQuery calendar control to pick from. And to do that, we're just going to write a little jQuery here. We're going to say document ready. We're going to hook into the document ready. We'll do a function. And in here, we will just say, okay, jQuery, please go find the, I called it due date, right? The due date value, due date. You guys were just going to let me make that mistake. And we'll just, you know, call the date picker function on that, right? So, and we will close this. We got them all. Catch up with me. So we got that one. We got that one. Oh. Hold up. I wanted one more, right? Yeah. Nope. Variable. Oh. No? Thank you. Jay, you'll get it eventually. There we go. You can see jQuery and Jay, not good. Thank you. So my whole goal is to make those of you that know jQuery and HTML feel really good. Okay, so now we have our thing here. Get it right next time. And when we tab into there, we have our nice picker. And now when we add, we'll add that task. Now, one of the other things, I mentioned the F12 tools, right? That's a big investment in Internet Explorer, big investment also getting some of those tools into Visual Studio, right? So you have the page inspector technology, which is effectively the same thing. That stuff works with SharePoint, right? So I can go in, and I can go into selection mode, and I can start going in and figuring out, you know, pick something. Oh, let's maybe that, right? And we can go right in via the F12 tools and see what's going on. Oops. If I stop messing around with my Windows, I'll blow it up so everybody can see it. We can see exactly where it is, right? We can see exactly what styles and so forth. I don't know about you guys, but as a SharePoint person, figuring out what styles are actually affecting my UI is a pain. So this is a really great way to do that, I think. So again, an example where I think the thing to get in your head and the thing to be thinking about, especially when you go to Visual Studio 2012, is if you saw it work in a web development scenario, it should work when you're doing SharePoint development. So if there was a tool that you saw or some technique that you saw that made your life easier to do web development, give it a try when you're doing SharePoint development, because it should work. And if not, then let us know, and it will work next time. So, and obviously, we can use the script debugging and all that kind of stuff there as well. OK, yeah. Sure. Yes. So the question was around tools like SPMetal, which allows, if you're not familiar with it, it's a utility that allows you to create strongly typed classes that are then link queryable, right? Queryable using the language and area query syntax to access list data and lists. So are we incorporating any of those into the product even deeper? And actually, in this case, we didn't. It wasn't so much of a lack of it's a great tool and people use it. In all honesty, there's an ecosystem out there of community add-ons to Visual Studio, and they had a pretty good extension that actually pulled it in, and we decided that one works pretty well, so we'll spend our resources elsewhere this time. In the future, I think we definitely will do it, but it is one of the other things we factor in. If the ecosystem's got a tool out there, the community's created an add-on, it's well-received and well-liked, we'll take that into account in our prioritization so we give you the best complete experience rather than just repeating something that somebody else had already done. So, great question, though. Any other questions before I sort of move into the next chunk? Yeah. Question is the JavaScript thing a 2010 only kind of thing, or does it work in previous versions? That's a great question. I honestly don't know. I haven't tried it in 2007. Correct. The client object model is a 2010 feature, so you don't have the object model, right? Like the SP client context and all that kind of stuff. That JavaScript object model was a 2010 feature. It's using the object model, which under the covers is using, well, in all honesty, a combination of things. It's mostly using the web services in 2010 still, but some cases it's using REST APIs that existed in that case. So the beauty of it is we don't care, and as they move, we don't care. All right. Next thing I want to do is let's move into a little bit of the sort of packaging and deployment. I told you I'd talk to you a little bit about what's going on under the covers when we F5. So let's look at that first. So I'm going to drill into the properties. I think this is interesting. I've had a couple conversations with folks at the booth that are architects looking to provide guidance for development teams. I'll touch maybe on some guidance, but more I want to give you a sense of what's available in the tool that you can get in and maybe leverage as part of your guidance or standard machine practices and configurations and stuff. So inside of SharePoint, one of the things we did is we added a couple deployment configurations and then steps that you can control and use to change your configuration and change your deployment model, and then it's extensible so you can add your own steps. We have a set of pre-deploy and post-deployment commands that you can just give us just on the command line. And then down here in this deployment configuration, you see all of the various steps. If I go in and view that, you see what we do. And this is where when we go and actually go do an F5, these are the actions that we will perform. And then when we're done, these are the actions we'll kind of walk backwards through and take out. So for example, the retract solution, right? If you didn't want that, you would just remove it from your active configuration. And now when you F5, we'd push it out there. When you stop debugging, we'd leave whatever we pushed out there. And as long as you have the, where is the command? The recycle IS pool. Oh, we rolled into that. Yeah, so in the recycle IS pool, you also will see that part of what we do in there is we'll do that detection to see if there's a conflict. So now what you just get is you just get more conflicts every time you F5'd, right? And we'd retract and then deploy. So your F5 would take a little bit longer, but we wouldn't pull things, you know, away from you when you stop debugging. So you can go do that. Activating features, same thing. This is pretty popular if what you're trying to do is test feature activation code. Maybe you don't want us to actually activate the feature when you F5 because you want to do that on your own as part of your debugging workflow. So you just remove that action and we won't run it anymore, those kind of things. As I said, this is extensible. It's another place where the ecosystem went out and created a number of interesting extensions, tasks, that plug in here and you can use to configure your deployments on F5. But again, mantra for my team is give you a good experience out of the box. You don't have to worry about this stuff. I'm just telling you so you know it's available in case you want to tweak these things. So that's a little bit about how, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the comment was that they've seen times with that retraction where we'd partially retract a web part, right? You wouldn't see it, but it'd still be in a solution gallery. In all honesty, it's a little bit of both. We're kind of both at fault there. But I'll say it's a Visual Studio bug. We can usually force things to happen. So I won't blame it on my SharePoint partners this time. Okay, so that's one part. The other thing is, you know, we know that you're not done when you've built it and F5'd and feel good about kind of where your project's at. So the other thing we wanted to do was give you an experience for controlling what the package and what the individual features of your SharePoint solution look like. That's important, right, because that's the way you manage these things once they get deployed and turn them on and turn them off and so forth. Again, this is a place where by default we try to create, well, we create a single package for your solution. You can add more, but by default we create one. And we try to create as few features as possible by default. So that just means we look for things that are at the same feature scope and we put them together in the same feature. That's just so you have things working by default. If you don't like it, you can go in and start using these design experiences to change that and modify it. So I can do some things such as, for example, what I might want to do is look at this and say, okay, I've got a task list instance, I've got a list definition, I've got these two web parts. Maybe I, you know, for my deployment, I like my HTML JavaScript one way more maybe than my other one. I don't need them both. So I can go in and I can edit that feature, and I can actually just decide that we're gonna take this one and we're gonna remove it from the feature entirely. So now in this package, when I go package and deploy this, that web form based ASP.NET web form based web part won't even be deployed anymore. It won't go in at all. We could rearrange these things. We'll do validation to make sure that you're not putting things that are at different scopes into the same feature and so forth. We also, you know, try to keep it simple, but we know that there's lots of things you need to be able to do in addition to just what we surface in this visual part of the designer. So we go in and do some more advanced things. additional assemblies. This is where if you have like a third-party DLL or just an assembly, a DLL that you're using, and it, for whatever reason we don't see it, and you need to deploy this part of your suite, you just add it in here. We also allow you to make safe control entries as part of the feature and package designer. So if you're using a third-party web control, you know, ASP.NET control, you obviously need to get that into SharePoint's whitelist, so the SharePoint will actually allow it to run, will allow you to make those entries through the designer. All the while, we're giving you a view into what that actual manifest is going to look like, what the XML is. If you really, really need to do something, there are a few things you can't do by the designer. You can go in here and you can start doing your own editing. So if we said feature, right, you'll see that once we have valid XML, it's adding it right into the rest of it. Now, it's adding it in a bad location, but if I fully qualify this, we'll merge your XML with our XML. I'll take that out of there. And if that's not good enough and you just want full control, pop open and you have full control in an XML editor. It's also what I like to call the load the gun pointed at your foot feature, because it's now all you. We will give you a little bit of kind of statement completion via the schema. We will do that inside the editor, but you're off and running, so you've declared you know what you're doing, so go for it. So anyway, that's package. Same thing on the feature side. You can do feature dependencies as well, so if you need, you know, features are interrelated, and if you install this one, you need to make sure this one's installed or activated, you can set that through the designer as well, through the feature activation properties. So again, trying to be pretty powerful and give you the capabilities you need to get your solution not only built, but designed from the perspective of how it's going to be administered and deployed and packaged up correctly. So that's a little bit about kind of the feature package and project system stuff that we've done. When we're happy with this, the next thing we need to do and we might want to do is actually go publish it. In Visual Studio 2012, we added the ability to deploy a SharePoint solution directly to Office 365 from your development machine. You can still create the WSP packages and all that stuff. We still do all of that. That's what the publish to file system option would do and hand it off to somebody. But if you have access to that Office 365 environment and you created something like a sandbox-based solution or an entire client markup kind of solution like I just did, we can publish directly to Office 365. Now, if the network gods are good and everybody's happy here, this is going to be a little weird. What you're seeing here is the fact that I'm using actually my federated corporate account, but I'm not on my corporate network right now. I'm not on the Microsoft network, so we're going to get this intermediate login, which sometimes causes me a problem here. It doesn't appear that it did this time. Yes, it did. Found a publish conflict. Great. Okay, cool. Let's go in here. Deactivate. Yes, deactivate it. Let's nuke it. Closing that. Go down. Let's do this one more time. There we go. We have now published directly to an Office 365 instance from our development machine. And one of the things you notice is it's the right way to describe this. We got a little scared about the idea of automatically activating and deploying features into what could potentially be a production site. So we decided we wouldn't do automatic activation. Instead, we just take you to the solution gallery and let you control the rest of it from there. Maybe we were a little too conservative, but I don't know. I get a little scared deploying things automatically to what could be production. So what we need to do is we actually need to go in, and now we just need to say, okay, let's activate this. This feature that should now pull it into our site. We can get the WSP if we needed it to. But now when I go back to my site, if I look at all of my site content, I should see the stuff I just deployed. which I don't. All right, we're not going to watch me debug that. We'll go to a different one. And you would, okay, fair, I asked for it. Oh, you're right, I didn't, you're right, good catch. Just to show you it worked. Add task. So this is the one I did this morning. And Jay messed up. So that means I'm going to give you guys all fours and fives in my review of you guys because I messed up. Okay, so what we've seen is that we can go and we've seen a couple different ways for creating and interacting with creating things like web parts, lists, using Visual Studio. We've seen that we have a lot of the same standard common experiences that we have in just general Visual Studio development, general web development when we're targeting SharePoint. We see these unique tools around packaging and feature design, project system work that we've done to make that smooth. And we've also seen how that's all very customizable and extendable as part of you creating the environment that you want to do your work. And then, of course, we've seen how we can deploy that to Office 365. If that's not where we're going, we, of course, can go in here and do the package to or publish to file system, in which case we're going to create a WSP that you can then go off and deploy into your environment. If you're doing on-prem, that's still the way we do it. In all honesty, it's because we don't actually have an API to go and push it to your on-prem environment. But we're working with our SharePoint friends to get that done so we could give that to you as well in the same kind of way. And actually, if you're interested in it, I think it's bright and early on Thursday morning. One of our SharePoint MVPs, Chris O'Brien, is doing what should prove to be a really interesting talk on the broader lifecycle management and testing using Visual Studio and those tools. And if he does what I think he's going to do, which I'm pretty sure he will take you all the way up through showing you how you can actually create a complete continuous integration, continuous deployment environment with SharePoint, so that when someone checks in, tests run, if the builds happen, if tests run against the build, if the builds pass, we'll push that, you can push that off into your next environment down the line and keep going. So a pretty cool stuff, bunch of PowerShell and that kind of stuff involved in that. I wasn't intending to show it to you, but one of the things that we did it started with Visual Studio 2010, Service Pack 1. We made some improvements around some of the higher end features in Visual Studio Ultimate, specifically around the Profiler and IntelliTrace. So in IntelliTrace, we now support the ability of collecting IntelliTrace logs from a SharePoint server. So if you're familiar with IntelliTrace, that's that DVR style of debugging, right, where you weren't there, but you can get the log file, and it's like you were there. And you can start stepping back in time and seeing what happened on your server. So we did that in Service Pack 1. In Visual Studio 2012, we extended that into the profiling tools. So we can now gather profiling reports off of a SharePoint server, which is pretty cool if you're trying to diagnose performance problems. I will admit we still have work to do there. And actually, the team announced a few months ago that as part of a feature pack for Visual Studio 2012, they're going to add better behaviors into that profiling report so that we give you the ability to just flip a switch and sort of make the SharePoint stuff go away and focus on your code. Because as interesting as it may be where SharePoint has performance problems, there's not a lot you can do about that in your code, so we'll make it easy for you to find where your code is in that hot path, for example, and those kinds of things. The other thing that we did in Visual Studio 2012 is we added support for unit testing frameworks other than our own, so things like NUnit and that kind of stuff can be plugged into our unit testing test runners. We've also incorporated what I believe we're currently, it goes between behaviors and fakes. I don't know which one the team's using today. What it really is a set of mocking detour frameworks into the product as well. Why is that interesting? Who's done pure unit testing against SharePoint? Yeah, not very many people. Why? Because it's really, really hard. It's really, really hard because some of the SharePoint object models you interact with are not, they don't have constructors that you can use to actually just bypass them. You have to go and use detour frameworks and things like that to not actually have SharePoint code run, which is what you'd want to do in a pure unit testing environment. These fakes allow you to do that, and we will actually as I believe as part of that feature pack, we will ship a set of fakes for SharePoint. So if you want to do pure unit testing, the fakes are there for you. You can test your code. Yeah, then you can then continue to use the real SharePoint object model to do integration testing and stuff like that out of that tool as well. So I think, again, the way I think about that is just continuing to try to round out that experience so that just because you're a SharePoint developer doesn't mean you can't have access to all this cool stuff that we're adding elsewhere in Visual Studio that developers want. So trying to round that out and make sure that you're continuing to be first-class folks in the Visual Studio development environment. I said if I'd have time, I'd show you guys one thing real quick. Let's go in and let me show you one other thing that most people don't really think about when they think about SharePoint development. How many folks are familiar with Lightswitch? Okay, let me show you a really quick example of just, I think it's interesting as developers to just be aware of this product and be aware and think about where it might fit in some of your development tasks and how it relates to SharePoint. So let me go in. I'm going to go back into Visual Studio. I'm going to choose Lightswitch. Doesn't matter, VB, C#. I did C# before, we'll do VB now. What Lightswitch is a experience. The tagline I always throw out is it's the simplest way to create a business application, right, within the enterprise. Business applications, they're about data, they're about UI, and they're about rules and logic, right? The stuff that is really common, data, how to get that data into and out of UI, how to get it into and out of a database, that's just repetitive code that you write the same pattern all the time, right? And it's not really the value of your app necessarily. The value of your app is those unique rules. So we wanted to create an experience where we would do that for you, let you focus on your rules, and give you a good pattern for doing that. Under the covers, we're building best practice architecture, best practice implementation. What I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna create a simple table here, and we'll do something for an employee. We'll do a couple fields. Let's close the other views. Okay, so we can create data and we can consume data. In our case, we're gonna create some data, and we're just gonna create a simple employee table maybe. Give it a couple properties, we'll say last name, maybe first name, and let's do an email. One of the things Lightswitch does is it does offer up a set of common data types that people use in business apps, like email and phone number and things like that. Under the covers, it's just a string, just the way you would do it, but because we know it's an email, we can do UI presentation that's better, we can do validation on it that's better, we can surface up properties specific to that, so in my case, I could say that my default domain for this is Microsoft.com, those kind of things. So we've got that. Let's create a screen. We'll do two real quick. We'll do a search screen. This is the other big thing that we've done with Lightswitch is we looked at these business apps, especially the ones that are sitting within like that departmental scope. And boy, you'd be surprised. There's a set of UI patterns that we just implement over and over and over again in those apps. So why not create an experience that just drives based on that UI pattern as opposed to making you go and draw all that stuff out every time. So we've done those two things. I'm just going to go ahead and run this, and you'll see in the matter of a couple minutes, including me talking, we've got the beginning of an app that can read and write data to a database. So here it is coming up. We're going to have a list, sort of a grid that shows up that shows us what data we have. We won't have any because we just created it from scratch. I apologize for the performance of my machine today. If you are familiar with Lightswitch, you'll see that the UI looks different of the apps. We actually updated it quite a bit. The old one's there as well, but we defaulted to this newer one. Okay, so we don't have any. Let's go into our employees, into our tasks. Create a new employee. We'll create one for me. You see the defaulting worked. We can save it. That is my email address. If you have additional questions, thoughts, comments after the talk, feel free to send me email. Happy to chat with you about that. Yes, the question is the 2012 code compatible for Lightswitch with Lightswitch 2011? Right. Yes, absolutely. Same code or compatible code. If you move, we don't break anything. That's my boss's email. My boss's email address. So only send him mail if you want to say nice things about me. So you see that here we are, right? We get that data from the database, we can drill in, and we can see somebody. Okay, interesting, but what does that have to do with SharePoint? Well, a couple things. A lot of these apps don't have data just from one place. So we often want to go and add additional data sources. And we can do it from a database, we can do it from RIA services, we can do it from OData, we can also do it from SharePoint. So maybe what I have is in my employee thing, what I'm really trying to do is maybe I want to track follow-ups with some customers, and I've got that in a task list sitting over in SharePoint somewhere. So just so happens that I do have that scenario. Funny how that works. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go grab the root of my SharePoint site here. Really, I'm going to grab it. Pop back over to LightSwitch. Paste that in. Say next. I have an auth problem, of course. -VS11. Let's see if this works. Yeah, bummer. That's what happens when you put a machine on the domain and then take it back off. But so what you would have seen was I would have gotten the list back. I would have gotten the definition. And what was really cool there is I can then relate the SQL data to that list data and have it automatically start showing up on the screen. And it's read write back to the list. Then at this point, you've got a Silverlight app. Lots of people use this, and then we'll deploy it into SharePoint using SharePoint Silverlight web part host. And now you have this little app that's sitting in SharePoint talking to a database, and you cooked it up in a matter of minutes. So that's... that's kind of what I wanted to show you guys. Just, let's say, I'm not trying to say this is replacing the existing SharePoint development user. Just, you know, as a developer, I think it's good to be aware of the existence of these kind of tools. And man, I know when I was doing custom app development, there were lots of times where I would ask myself, why am I spending so much time building a simple form to talk to a simple table, right, to do things like table maintenance, like, you know, code table maintenance and stuff like that. So that was the idea. So we talked about this. We saw this in the product. We talked about this and saw it in the product. We saw the demo. This is really what Chris is going to be going through the next in his other session on Thursday, so I'm not going to spend too much time there. I talked about this, so I didn't show it to you, unfortunately, but and we're kind of out of time. But these are some great things that we've added. We talked about LightSwitch. This is not my slide, so. The important thing now, resources everywhere. Complete your evaluation. Remember, my rule of evaluations, the numbers are for my boss, comments are for me. I'm just kidding. No, you guys have been great. I really appreciate the time. We do have a few minutes, but rather than have everybody sit here, I know people are going to want to rush out. If you have questions, feel free to come on up. We can talk a little bit more, and then I'll be down in the exhibit area later. So thank you all.